welcome back to another episode of your favorite podcast, your favorite hockey podcast. It is Hockey the Podcast. And having a look at the time, having a look at the date, it's not too long to go before we head into the 2021 Olympics taking place in Tokyo, Japan. And it's only fair, it's only right that we head into the hockey ladies and gents that will be doing South Africa proud over in the Japanese capital. With me, as always, it's Tyron Jabu Barnard. But I tell you what, this time around, we've got some very, very special guests for a very, very special start to a series. It is Talking Tokyo ZA. Ty, how you doing?
Yeah, how's it, Derek? It's always good to talk about hockey. It's exciting when we have a showpiece event like the Olympic Games to prepare for. And, you know, you and I haven't experienced the thrill of the opening ceremony, the chance of running on a treadmill next to Serena Williams, or bumping into Roger Federer while you're having a cup of coffee, or doing a boat race against Michael Phelps, because you don't want to do a in-the-water race. You have to do something outside with him. But we have collected a collection of... That's terrible. What a great start. We have assembled our Avengers tonight, our collection of former Olympians, and one man who should have been in Tokyo with the team. They're going to take us through prepping for what we are going to expect. What are the highs of being an Olympian? What are the lows of being an Olympian? What are the challenges? And how are South Africa going to do? Of course, we'll also be having daily recaps, previews, with a massive group of hockey lovers here in South Africa. The South African hockey family are going to be talking together about all things Tokyo. So, I mean, talking Tokyo, really. I'm starting to get goosebumps just thinking about it.
Yeah, I completely concur, and the name says it all. It's talking about arguably the biggest sporting event on the planet, and it is a year in the making. It's 5 years in the making. Of course, we were meant to be there last year. It didn't happen, but thankfully, and touch wood, it is happening this time around. And, I mean, up until weeks ago, we were still wondering whether this event would still take place. Thankfully, it is the case. The athletes are settling into the Olympic Village. Our very own colleague, Raider Media partner Raymond Herbst, is with them, especially getting friendly with the hockey folks as well. And yeah, it's all systems go for the 2020 Olympic Games. I can't wait. I can't wait to see everyone in action, but particularly I can't wait to see South Africa's men and women hockey sides in action. We know it's been bumpy rides in the past, but this time around, both teams doing the business over in Japan.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the fact that both teams are there and we're seeing the photos coming out from the village, I mean, if you are a hockey lover and you are a South African, you can't not be smiling about the fact that the teams are there. That there was no carpet pulled out from under their feet at the last minute. And they're there. And, you know, maybe we're not as fully prepared as we would have liked thanks to COVID and whatever other reasons, but we're there. And we know that the South African spirit is going to be on show. And that itself is something so incredibly exciting to look forward to. And, yeah, like you say, I can't wait. I can't wait for the games to get under the way. At least the first few games for me are going to be a normal time. There's a few where we need to get up at 2:30 in the morning, but it'll be worth it. It's freezing cold, so I think I'm going to maybe watch the games from my electric blanket bedroom. But
nah, to be fair, Ty, you do that anyway. We all know that how you hate the cold. So I don't think it could be any time of day, whatever the temperature, that an electric blanket's going to be on regardless. But you know,
but Derek, listen, yeah, just. I know you'll never let me live it down. Derek and I were covering the indoor hockey in Durban, and it was quite warm, and I don't know what I was thinking. I wear hoodies all the time, and I put a hoodie on, but it was like 30 degrees, and he just looked at me and was like, what? It's about 3 degrees now, and I'm wearing a hoodie, and Derek is in a short-sleeved T-shirt. So there's something not right with your brain, Derek. That vaccine has gone straight to your head. But, yeah, I mean, look, if we want to talk about South Africa's hockey – and at the Olympics, there's only one place that we can start, and that is all the way back in 1996 in Atlanta. Only 8 teams in the women's competition, and our women didn't qualify, although they were African champions. The men did get to go, and our first guest tonight was one of the men that got to go. Craig Jackson was one of the team members. He was 2004 the captain of the team. But Craig, welcome to the show. And yeah, I mean, just thinking about the build-up towards Tokyo now must bring back some memories from both 1996 and 2004.
Yeah, thanks, guys. Nice to be here. Yeah, it's very serendipitous. When I say it's you can't help not think back when the Olympics rolls around, having been there before. And I suppose I was fortunate, as you mentioned, to go to two of them, both very different in that the first time I went, I was, you know, very, very wet behind the ears. I think I was 20 years old, and I was, you know, I think most of the team were a little bit like duck, deer in the headlights. Whereas in Atlanta 8 years later, you know, we had the bit more maturity and certainly the ability to appreciate the moment. Because I think, you know, one of the dangers, I think, is that you're on this massive stage, and because you're so overwhelmed by things, before you know it, the 2 weeks is just rushed by. Or, I mean, you're obviously there for longer than 2 weeks, but the 2 weeks of competition have just rushed by. And we were very conscious as a team, certainly in the second Olympics that I went to try and embrace every moment. And I think that's part of the challenge that both our teams are going to have now. You obviously don't want to get overruled by the situation, but you also want to, you know, appreciate that you're part of this bigger event and this world event. And as Derek says, no doubt in my mind, certainly as an amateur sportsman, the pinnacle of our sport. So yeah, I think, you know, very, very fond memories. I mean, you still live now looking back. Jake's was part of the one team that was at the Olympics, and I still, you know, relive some of those games and what could have been and, you know, we came so close to really achieving something, and hopefully our guys and our girls get it right this time. You just need one or two things to go your way. And, you know, as you guys know, it's covering sport. The higher up you go in terms of the level that you're competing at, those margins get thinner and thinner, and it's, you know, it's just ball goes your way on the day, and suddenly you're in a semi-final or a quarter-final, whatever the case may be, you know. So hopefully the guys and the girls embrace the opportunity, you know, really appreciate and live the moment, and don't get too overawed by the situation, and just do us all proud.
Yeah, Craig, you are just one piece of what is an absolute stellar lineup taking part this evening. And thanks so much for joining us. Great to have you on board. So we kicked off in Atlanta. We moved over to Athens, and let's head over still in Athens. And then we move over 4 years later to Beijing, and none other than Bruce Jacobs also joining us, who had the honor of captaining the side in 2008. Bruce, again, it must bring massively fond memories thinking back to China.
Yeah, thank you for having me, guys, and also awesome to see familiar faces again. I hope you're all doing well and safe. Yeah, it has been quite a journey for me, and I think Jack has mentioned that I've been part of the team that played at the Athens Olympics, and that's one thing, Olympic Games. But it's quite an honor and a privilege to actually captain your side at an Olympic game. So for me, captaining the team in Beijing was an incredible experience. But as Jack has said, you also don't want to have those regrets, and sometimes you get so overwhelmed by things that before you know it, your tournament is over. And, you know, it's those small margins where results just don't go your way. And it's a difference between playing maybe for top six or playing for relegation or last place. So for me, Athens was probably one where Jacko has mentioned that we really played some good hockey, and in that games, I think one or two results just didn't go our way, whether it was these bad decisions or whatever. But I think that games was incredibly good for us in terms of our performance. Beijing for me personally was a completely different games in the sense that we probably didn't perform as well as what we wanted to. But I think it was also due to partly our preparation. I think if you go back to how we qualified for Athens, we had to go through another route, not just going through Africa, because we actually lost in the final to Egypt. So we had to go to Europe. And I think that was kind of a blessing for us to actually go that route, because it helped us prepare better mentally. Because I think going to Europe and playing that qualifier, I think that was probably the most mentally challenging tournament that we went to, but it also really stood us in good stead going into the Olympic Games in Athens.
It's interesting because obviously it was Belgium that we beat on a penalty shootout to secure that spot. And speaking of the Athens Games, there was a very young player in the women's side. She was, I think, about 20 years of age. For some reason, she retired a few years after this. She could have gone to a few more. And, of course, joining us tonight is Tswanelo. Coach Polo. Polo, it must be absolutely, like, I mean, I know you've been involved with the men's side now, working with Springs and the team. Is there a part of you that wishes you had maybe gone to more? But obviously, the experience of being at one can never be taken away.
Oh, well, guys, amazing to have all of these legends all here together. Firstly, that when I saw the lineup, I was like, goodness, this is me. And I'll tell you the story later about how I felt in the Olympic Village when I saw one of my proper, like, idols. But yeah, Athens was special. And what made Athens so special was it was the centenary of the Olympic Games. And we went there a few months earlier to do the pre-Olympic tournament to test our things. And from that to what we arrived to when the games were happening was chalk and cheese. You know, the Greek government, even the South African consulates, they stopped at nothing to make sure that we had the best experience. And could I have gone to more? Yeah, but life happens. And when I look at where my path has taken me, I am incredibly happy, incredibly blessed to be where I am right now. And, you know, Tyron, you've spoken about me working with the men's team. That has been something that I didn't really think about. But when it was, when I got the call from Springs, just asking me about what are your plans, where are you going? And I think I'd love for you to join us. And I was like, there's no way I wouldn't. So it's been an incredible, 18-20 months with the men's team. And we have such a great group of young and experienced men going to these games. So I can't wait to see what we're going to produce because we have worked so hard to put things together in the right way. And I think we are going to peak at the right time.
Moving over now, and great to have you all on board, Paula. Great to see you. And yeah, it's amazing to see what you have achieved over the last almost 2 years with working with the men's side. And moving over to a triple Olympian, 2004, 2008, 2012. Paula, I think you can introduce her, actually. Who am I talking about?
You're talking about the legendary Marsha. Most of them will know her as Marsha Marisha, but this is the legendary leader that is Marsha Cox.
Marsha Cox.
I'm not the only one, though. I'm not the only triple Olympian on this call.
Yeah, to be fair, there are two. There's actually Kate and yourself. So we've got to be specific. So Marsha, 2004, 2008, 2012, twice as captain. Kate, 2004, 2008, 2012 as well. But Marsha, yeah, I mean, we'll bounce between you and Kate. Three times at the Olympic Games, I spoke about our colleague now, Raymond Haps. So he's been over there for 3-4 days. So he's a media representative. He's just in the Olympic Village, which is amazing. But I mean, for myself and Ty, that is mind blowing. Just even be able to walk around there. You got to be there and compete and captain for three Olympics in a row. And like, is it still overwhelming? Do you still think about that and think, wow?
Yeah, I do. I think. You know, Kate, you can also just jump in. I think it's nice if we have a little chat about it. But I think, you know, there are just so many different elements to it. Each game is so special and unique, and there are special moments from each game that, like, I think are imprinted in my brain, and I'll never forget. It's just layered with so many different emotions every single time. From Craig mentioned it, you know, your first time, and I think it's the term that was often, Kate, you would probably laugh because I don't know if you remember, but for Athens and the build up to Athens, I was often called in for handling distractions. So how do you handle distractions? So I think that is, you know, something that is always going to be an element for any team. is the first one for some of the team members where you do have distractions, and it's not just in your team, it's for every single athlete at the games. And I think we were just fortunate that we didn't have social media where we felt the need to be posting things. So the pressures were on making sure we didn't drop cameras or so in that regard, I think that our distractions are slightly different, but nonetheless they were there. You know, so, and then your second and your third one is it then becomes a little bit more interesting because you think you've got some experience, but like Paula says, the game starts and it's just a different ball game. And I don't think that it matters how many Olympic Games you go to. That's always going to be the case. The other teams have been preparing. The other teams are also going to be distracted. I think this year in particular with COVID and the year and a half that every single country has faced, knowing that just outside the village there's protests happening, knowing that there's nobody going to be in the stands. And these are like elements that you kind of look forward to in the games, having your family in the stands and waving to them. And one of the things that I also want to talk about is that, you know, like years ago you never had very many moms at the Olympics, and Kate was one of the first few, I think, at an Olympic Games to be a mom in London. And now you're seeing that also being an element where more and more women are going and having their babies and coming back and competing. So you've got top athletes in the world on this Olympic stage, and you know that some of them are also having to handle that dynamic of their babies. And I think the IOC have allowed breastfeeding moms to take their babies as well. So, you know, like, I can't imagine what it's like for everybody this year where you've got so many new, unique situations. And just reflecting on our experience, I sometimes get nervous for these athletes thinking about all of these other extra elements that are at play. I don't know about you, Kate.
Sure, how things have changed, Himashi. But I think to your point, you know, all three Olympic Games hold such a special place in my heart, but they were also different. I think unlike Jacko in Athens, he had experience. I think I was Bambi in the headlights, you know, just like, wow, what have I just arrived to? You know, it was just so overwhelming and actually just so surreal. And then Beijing with a little bit more experience under the belt, you know, I think for me also personally, it was probably quite a peak in my career, and a different experience. And then London was, yeah, as Marcia said, with my little 1.5 year old in the stands, supporting me. So really, really different experiences. And, I'm looking at Sia on my screen here and my heart is bleeding for you, young man. I'm really, really, really sorry to hear what's happened. But every single player that's there, you know, it's something that is going to be etched in the hearts and minds forever. And it's an experience of a lifetime. And for our men and women that are over there at the moment, you know, it's not just about the results, as we all know. It's about what it's doing for the sport in our country and for young girls and boys just to have that sort of those heroes to aspire to and also the dream to work towards, to go to the Olympics. So I think as South Africans, our journey is never going to be the same as some of the other professional teams and the outfits, you know, and really, I think it's just pointless comparing our journey and sponsors and what they have and what we don't. But it's what should actually scare our opposition is our resilience and our fight that we bring. And anything can happen. I think, Marsh, we've seen that in Athens, yep, when we beat the Germans 3-0, who went on to win, yep, the gold medals, when we set that record in London against USA 7-0, you know, anything can happen on the day. And so it's about bringing that South African spirit and passion and giving it everything over the next 2 weeks.
And, you know, I just want to add to that, like what Kate says is so true, because at the end of the day, everybody just remembers the top three who goes home with the medal. And nobody remembers anybody else thereafter. And I share the exact same sentiments as Kate. Our journey and our story is more important for the pathway that it opens up and the inspiration that it gives to the youth. And I think that if we just remind ourselves that and just keep focused on that, then maybe the way we also experience the games and the results of the games might be sometimes different. Because I don't know, but for those of us who have been there and experienced that opening game, well, for us the ladies, where we just got caned every opening game, you know, like, it's heartbreaking. You're just brought to your knees. And I think actually if we were just reminded at the time and kept us like both feet on the ground and just remind us that actually that result isn't really that important, because it's more about the legacy that we leave behind and not whether we come home with a medal or not, because there are going to be many other teams walking home empty handed.
Absolutely, Marsha. We are actually having this conversation very recently regarding one of the things that our South African Olympic Committee had previously said, was that they don't want to pay money for people who aren't likely to medal. And fortunately, that's not really in line with the Olympic Charter at all. And only three people are going to medal. So Jamaica wouldn't be able to send three sprinters then. That would cause problems in their country. But, you know, another person who has been, of course, is a regular friend of the show. Not that long ago that he was here and telling people.
I think it's been about a week since he was last on, huh?
Yeah, well, yeah, the way you two are talking on social media, I maybe should have let you introduce him. I feel like I'm coming in between you. But Justin Reid Ross, the man who, there are iconic photos of scoring bullets. One of his goals was chosen by the FIH as a great Olympic goal. Probably wasn't actually his best goal at the Olympics. But, Justin, I mean, not just did you experience the Olympics with London 2012 and going crazy next to Oscar Pistorius in the opening ceremony and making a documentary now, you know, getting hockey on the map, but, I mean, you also got the experience of scoring goals there and playing in front of some amazing crowds there in London. You must look back and just smile on the experience that you had.
Yeah, Ty, first of all, thanks, guys, for having me again. I feel like I'm part of the furniture now, which is always nice. It's an interesting one. You say, looking back, you know, stuff that gets etched into your brain. I think for a lot of people on the screen here, maybe that was. I found it really difficult to flashback and remember my Olympic experience. I think I was so in the moment and so focused on what I was there to do that I find it really difficult to look back now and actually remember certain moments. What I do remember quite clearly, and this is something that that Marsha and Kate alluded to, is legacy and inspiration. And there's one player in particular on the screen at the moment who is responsible, I think, ultimately, and part of the team in Atlanta that motivated me to want to become an Olympian. That, you know, Jacko, watching that first game, you guys playing against Australia, Mark Hager scoring towards the end of the game and Beefy scoring the equalizer. I mean, I was 10 years old at the time, going absolutely berserk, and I didn't even play hockey. I didn't want to play hockey. You know, everyone knows my dad was a pretty big hockey player back in the day. I didn't want to play. I was a rugby player. But that changed me and put me on the course to becoming an Olympian myself. And then watching, Revo taking the reins in 2004 with you guys and Paulo being there with the ladies and seeing what you guys achieved, Marsh, obviously Katie as well. You know, I'm sharing the screen here with people that basically inspired me to want to be an Olympian and eventually get there, which is, yeah, you know, thanks to you guys. I don't know if I've ever had the chance to tell each of you guys that. But yeah, that's what this is all about, I think. And that's what these players that are in Tokyo at the moment need to remember. It's not about you as an individual athlete, especially as a South African hockey player, I believe. It really is about, you know, motivating and inspiring and leaving a legacy for the next generation to want to achieve something more than what we were maybe able to achieve, given the circumstances and the situation we were in at the time. You know, I think everybody here is very proud of what they achieved in their careers, and Sia, you've still got a lot to look forward to on that. But yeah, ultimately our time is up now, and hopefully we did that little bit to motivate the guys that are there and the girls that are there in one way or another to leave their own legacy and to make something special happen. And maybe that's in one game, maybe that's in the entire tournament, we don't know yet. But I'm certainly excited to watch the guys and the girls leave something special behind out there.
Yeah, you speak about the next generation. His name's popped up a few times, but you know, the last member of our panel tonight is Siya Nolichungu. Now, Siya was supposed to be in Tokyo with the team as the reserve goalkeeper. Unfortunately, he's injured his shoulder and had to withdraw and have a surgery. But Siya, you know, I did send this to you in a message, but I want people to hear it. I think that the manner in which you've handled this disappointment is a lesson for everybody around the country on how you take disappointment and use it to inspire. I have seen many people seeing the way you've reacted and turned around and said, man, that's what a South African is all about. And I don't think there's a person in the world that does not hope for you to be on that plane in 2024 in Paris, getting your Olympic rings then, getting that tattoo and getting the OLY. And you know, I wanted you here because, yes, you're not an Olympian yet, but you have the spirit of one. And so thank you for joining us today.
Thanks for inviting me, Tarek. Really, really appreciate it. Yeah.
Yeah, look, see, I mean, obviously for you it's a little bit different. You've been part of the current squad, and we really want to dig into that a little bit as we preview the tournament. You know, how would you say the team were feeling ahead of this? You were part of the camps in Potchefstroom. Yeah, it's been a difficult 18 months. COVID, you know, we're talking about lockdown. We're almost on day 500 of some form of lockdown here in South Africa. We haven't been able to play hockey. We got an opportunity against Namibia, but that's been it. What is the vibe like in the team? Because nobody here would have experienced what you've experienced.
Yeah, Ty. Thank you so much for having me. It's so awesome to be part of something so special and going forward. I'd say it began late 2018. Marissa had come down to one of our training sessions and was like, realistically, these are the criteria in order for you guys to qualify for the Olympic Games. We had to win an African Cup and qualify at an international tournament at FIH Series India. And in that moment, it seemed so surreal because we've just come back. It's a new group of lads. The squad has been extended to close to 45. So there was quite a big number of players, and we had set a buy-in from all 45 of those players leading from that date. And to go to India to beat the odds and still finish in the top two in FIH, which was really, really amazing. That was a box ticked. And the next phase was winning African Cup in Stellenbosch. Probably one of the most amazing things, playing an AFCON at your home ground, because the support is there, the vibe's there, and the victory is that much more sweeter. And yeah, it's just been a build-on process from there. And then we went into the series we played against the USA in Durban, and it was nice to have home supporters for a change. And also playing Namibia at home in Johannesburg was also another big highlight. And of course, leading towards 2020, when we played Germany in Johannesburg and we managed to snatch a draw out of them with their big guns. It just goes to say that the guys had bought into what we had been preparing over the past couple of years, and it sort of emulated, especially during lockdown. We started tackling our cultural piece. And I think that was the biggest fundamental in the whole team environment, because most teams normally focus on just the physical, the tactical, and the technical side, but we normally forget about the mental side. And that's where I've been fortunate enough to be part of the squad since 2017, obviously working very well with Rassi Gowan and Richard Curtis for quite some time. And you learn a little bit of resilience, and you become tough as nails learning with those guys, because some of them are very old school and some of them are very, very new with ideas. So it's always so cool to just pick a little attribute for each and every one of them. But yeah, leading towards that, it's just been such a nice buy-in from everyone, because we all have come from different backgrounds, we all have different personalities, we all see hockey in a different light, because majority of us have played in all parts of the world. We've got about, I'd say 50% of the squad have been are playing all over the world. So everyone has a different idea. Even local guys are coming with something quite special. We've got close to 60% of the squad being under 30. If you look at the rest of the Olympic teams, most of them have majority of the experienced players. And that is something that is so special that hasn't been seen quite often in big stages. So I'm really, really excited to just see my peers just go out there. As you said, it is tough in the moment to send your guys off. But when you have a buy-in and such an amazing trust amongst each other, you put your pride aside and the team comes first. And who knows, maybe this is the Olympic Games where we make a playoffs or maybe even medal, doing the impossible. These are moments that count the most. And if this is what it takes for me to be a part of that process, then I'm willing to go every step of the way.
Ah, Sia, you know what? I must commend you on having a tremendous outlook. Many people would be so disheartened with the circumstances that have been dealt towards you. But everyone that I speak to in hockey circles, they said, you know, while it is disappointing for Sia, make no mistake, he will be there in future Olympic Games. You're young, you're talented, you're extremely determined. And yeah, in this short speech that you made there now, that comes across loud and clear. So we've got absolutely no doubt that you will be representing South Africa on the biggest stage in a couple of years' time, so don't worry about that, and you'll heal and you'll be back more fitter, firing and more talented than ever, we can assure you. And I'll tell you what, because we had Paulo shaking her head, nodding profusely, come in there, Paulo, because as soon as he was speaking about what the team would do over in Japan, you agreed wholeheartedly.
Yeah, I mean, we've worked hard on understanding where we could be better, where we can't realistically improve right now, and looking at where we can take those opportunities. I haven't watched as much hockey as I have in the last 2 years, and we analyze every little bit, and you can't, you know, predict what's going to happen on the day, but you can give yourself a chance by kind of knowing what the pattern is for the teams that you're playing against. So, what's for there? This men's team right now that, and the culture that is in, that's within that team, you can hear from Sia, it's all heart, right? It's all heart. I play a tiny role in being very detailed with the strikers and just that, right? And we can see one or two holes in teams, and we know what we're good at. And yeah, listen, this is going to be special. I really can't wait. Like Taryn, you said, can this start already? Because that's all I'm waiting for. Like, can we get on the field? Can we have that first whistle go and let the magic happen? Because the guys in this team, and I will only speak about the guys because that's what I know, right? The amount of work off the field, on the field, together in closed rooms has been incredible. It's second to none to any team that I've ever worked with. So I can't wait for us to get what we deserve. And I think, and that's going to shock a lot of people around the world. And that's all I'm going to say about what we're expecting to see when we get on the field.
Yeah, I tell you what, we can't wait to see the teams shock the world over in Japan. Okay, there's a lot of us in the room, and no one cares about Ty and I. I promise you, no one wants to hear our words. So we really going to be moderators throughout this thing, and we're going to kind of be the oil that lubricates the machine, to put it really mildly. So we want you, ladies and gents, to talk openly and just chat. It's a roundtable discussion, but let's go right back to Craig because it's been a while since we heard from him. And Craig, you're going to kick things off, and then I want everyone to just jump on board and just chat amongst yourselves. If need be, myself and Tom will fill in the gaps, but I promise you no one cares what we have to say. Craig, just going back, favorite Olympic Village memory?
Yeah, I'll probably come from Athens because, like Jasmine said, Atlanta was a bit of a blur. But just we had a thing, and it's part of. I mean, you're getting a sense from Sia that the men's team, certainly, I can speak more authority on the men's team than the ladies. There's certainly a bit of a vibe there, and that's the almost an essential ingredient that you need. And I think back to our team at Athens, Jake's. We had a thing called the Davey Carr Award, which Dave Carr is our manager, and we used to hand out the shirt out every day for the man of the match or the man of the day. And that guy had to, if it was a caricature that someone had drawn of Dave Carr, and you had to go and get that shirt signed by a world famous athlete. And what you got to remember in the Olympic Village is, I mean, you might see, you know, someone said Serena Williams, or you might see, you know, whoever, these world superstars. But you're not going up to them as some arb, because you're there in your own right as an elite athlete, and they realize that. So suddenly you can approach anyone for an autograph and a chat or whatever. You bump into them in the McDonald's queue trying to steal a few nuggets, Jake. So I remember that story well. we can talk about just now. But the highlight for me was probably handing over that shirt to Dave Carr, because at the end of 2 weeks, he had this memento from the Olympics signed by, you know, 14 of the world's top sportsmen, which was pretty cool. And some of the stories of the guys getting those signatures was quite special.
That's it.
There must be lots of those guys, yeah.
Bruce, let's hear about the nuggets.
Maybe let's move on to Bruce and then the McDonald's nugget story.
And then you can hear, while Bruce is unmuting, you can hear, yeah, Marsha's mischievous giggle in the background. So Marsha,
I'm just listening to Jack talk about Athens, and then I'm getting flashbacks of various moments. And yeah. And in the past few years, I've also managed to spend lots of time with Ned. And he often talks about some of those Athens memories as well in the village.
Yeah, that's the great thing about the Olympic, about team sport, is that you've got all these different characters in your team. You know, Ned often, his name pops up, Dave Stanley pops up, you know, and it's those guys. I mean, you think back in your career, you miss the games, and you like the odd game where you had a big surprise, or you know, it's your 200th cap or whatever the case is. But it's those off-field moments that really stick in my mind, you know, and that's brought about by, you know, playing tennis or you're playing golf. You're not going to get those moments, you know, unless you're in a Ryder Cup or whatever. But, you know, hockey, we're unashamed amateur sportsmen, and that's the joy of playing the sport, you know. And I mean, I'm still, Nettie's obviously there with the Belgian team as assistant coach. I'm probably chatting to him, you know, once a week or so. But, as you say, as we're running through this, the memories come flooding back. But I think it's, you know, I want to take Jake's fund. Yeah, I want to hear that story again. It was such a yeah, cool one. He's shaking his head at me.
Athens, there were so many fun memories. I mean, from, like you said, meeting guys that you only see on TV, to going and seeing Athens, and obviously being so significant. Paula mentioned, you know, the first Olympic Games was held in Athens, and to go there and go and visit the sites. To having the David Carr Award, but for me there's some special moments, like you said, off the field, and yeah, and I have fond memories, and I'll never live down that chicken nugget. But I also, before I go there, I think Marsha and Porter, do you remember you spoke about distractions, and we had Rez as a coach, and you guys had
Ross,
and we couldn't. It was almost like we couldn't even greet each other.
No.
What was it? Cacao.
Cacao.
Yeah. Have a bit of a chat. But yeah, going back to the village. I mean, going into the village and seeing all this, you know, free cokes, free ice creams, McDonald's in the dining hall, and you know, we professional athletes, and Red has given us a whole brief about, you know, we need to focus and be disciplined. And if you're going to go to McDonald's, you're going to order a salad, and be like, go to McDonald's, order a salad. And, you know, when we sit together, we all have to sit there, and everyone is just checking, okay, what you've ordered, and one day I said, shit, I really craving for this chicken nuggets, but I know I can't just order this nuggets, and there's got to be a way I can get this nuggets in. And then I said, okay, I'm going to order a salad, but then I'm going to take chicken nuggets, and I'm going to dig all these chicken nuggets under the like I've got salad. And then we were eating, and then for some reason, you know, the guys were having their little chuckle because they obviously figured out what had happened. And then, I don't know, someone, I think it must have been Emil, just, you know, kind of ratted on me and said, "Jake, what are you eating there?" And everyone looked, and everyone just had a good laugh. And I was, you know, you don't want to disappoint the coach. You don't want to disappoint them.
I had a similar situation in London with our friend Julian Hikes. Walking into the village for the first time at the dining hall, obviously spotting the golden arches at the back, Butty's eyes lit up. And I think within about 10 seconds of walking in, Clarkie was on to him. "Butty, no McDonald's while we're competing." So we had this massive sit-down talk, and you can see Clarkie was getting pretty serious. You know, the veins started twitching a little bit. And it must have been, we lost, I think, two games in a row in 2 days. So we had a narrow defeat to Spain, followed by a narrow defeat to Pakistan. And after the Pakistan game, we got home late in the evening, and Butty had just had enough. Couldn't take any more, went straight to McDonald's, walked back with a supersize Whopper, what they call it, a quarter pounder, and sat down, and assuming that Clarkie wasn't going to be coming in. And Clarkie walked in, and it was just a meltdown in the middle of the floor in front of everybody in there. Like the whole, and we scattered like cockroaches. We were like, there's no way we can be around this. The vein was popping about a couple of centimeters off Clarkie's head. And the next morning we had to have an apology session from Butty in front of the whole team. And needless to say, by the end of the tournament, after we won our last game, I think we ate McDonald's exclusively for 3 days straight, breakfast, lunch, and dinner, each and every one of us. So the McDonald's in the village, I think, has been cause for quite a few headaches for coaches over the years.
And you know that I don't think there's actually McDonald's this summer on. Ty, did you get that from Ray?
Yeah, Ray seemed to hint that McDonald's weren't there unless they're just in a special dining hall somewhere else. So I think from the pictures we're seeing, I'll ask. Well, no, they're all sleeping right now. Can't ask anyone right now. But Marcia, you are a fairly very always serious, above the line, never mischievous person. what other nonsense that you're allowed to share goes down in the village? That, I mean, I know there's always this thing, and I'm not referring to that, but there's always the statement that says, "What happens in the village stays in the village." Come on, what else is allowed out of the village?
I think there's lots of stories that came out of the villages. But yeah, I don't know. It's always quite funny because whenever there's like celebrity athletes that walk in, then you see, and the volunteers forget that they have a job to do. So that's also like, that's the first point. So they forget that they are controlling something, and they like drop everything and dash. So you see like massive crowds. So every few days you hear like, you see crowds running, or you hear so-and-so is in the dining hall, or like Messi's walking through the village. And then you make it like a dash to try and find him. And then you can't actually see him because his team is protecting him and walking like all the way around him and guarding him. But I think one of the nicest ones was when we bumped in London, we bumped into Roger Federer as a team. So we were out on our team walk, and like that, which is also quite unique when you actually are walking somewhere as a team. I think we were walking to the dining hall and
the casual dining.
Yeah. And we bumped into him, and so we all got awkward because it was like, okay, that's Roger Federer, but are we going to like surround him and harass him like everybody else does? Or, you know, he was also like, I think he had found a moment of peace, and then there were these like South African girls with a giddish like thinking, what are we going to do, who's going to go? And I can't remember, Kate, who dared to.
It was me. Yes. This was my story about my most memorable moments at the Olympics. I had like really awkward reaction where,
yes,
you just caught off guard, and then suddenly we're walking as a team along that path, and he came towards us, and it was like the most inappropriate reaction from me ever. He is my absolute sporting idol, and I literally just greeted him as if he was my best mate. I said, "How's it, Rog?" Oh my goodness, it just came out.
As well, I think that's why he was probably so nice to us, because we didn't go crazy.
And he stopped and had a photo of us, and we just had a few moments, right? Even talking to him.
Yeah, and he told us. Yeah, he told us his kids have their South African passport, and he was really proud of that. So we had like a connection with the, as Kate says, her boy Raj.
Special moments, eh?
Yeah. So that was also quite funny.
Carry on. You go.
No. You go.
One of my other really, really funny memories, Chief, is it was in those last few days, but very sadly, I guess our athletes won't experience this time round, is when you actually get to hang about after the competition.
I think a lot of the
memorable moments happen, and I will never forget in London as well. You know, we were always quite jealous of the Dutch and their orange bikes, because the village is big, and you do a lot of kilometers on the feet walking the village. I see they've got some really nice automatic buses now in Tokyo. It looks amazing.
And also bikes in the village.
But the Dutch were always spoilt with an orange bike each, and it was just the Dutch riding around the village. And on one of the last nights in London, clearly after many celebratory drinks, there was a group of Dutch guys. I'm not sure what sporting code they were from, but they found their way at the swimming pool in the village, and they didn't stop, and they just rode their bikes straight into the pool. And all of a sudden, there were five guys on orange bikes, and all of a sudden, they're at the bottom of the pool. It was classic. It was classic.
Justin, did you take the bike at the pool, or did you leave it there?
No way, he's been in gold, man.
I think one of my favorite memories was from Beijing, when I went to the Jamaica house and I was sitting in the lobby, and then I was in my tracksuit. Our lovely tracksuits that we got, probably our worst kit ever was Beijing. That probably goes down as one of the worst kit years. And so I had these like massive oversized tracksuit pants in the heat, and Usain Bolt was sitting. He came downstairs to do an interview, and he was like sitting opposite me, and I was thinking like, okay, this is also an awkward. I really want his autograph, or I really want a photo, but I had nothing. I just had myself. So I like sheepishly asked him for an autograph, and he was like, yeah, okay, but I had nothing. I didn't have a pen. I didn't have anything. So I was like, okay, on my tracksuit pants. So he signed each leg of my tracksuit pants, one with the 100 meter time, one with the 200 meter time. And then as I left, I was like, oh, shucks. And these are my pants that I have to travel home in. And I have no other South African kit. So I traveled home with Usain Bolt signature on my tracksuit pants. So that was my moment.
When you see that you went to the Jamaican house.
Yes.
By yourself. Like you wanted to do this. Where I begged you for days on end. Corner. And you were like, no, Fred, I was like, Fred, please, I just want to go see what they do. And you said no. And now you're saying you there, and you want
to. You see what happens when you have a little bit of experience.
I'm so happy we're doing this. The stories are coming up that I clearly would have never known about.
Yeah, well, if it wasn't for you, I wouldn't have got that experience of daring to visit other countries in the village, because that's what we did in Athens when we had downtime. We had no cell phones. I think we had world call cards. Do you guys remember that, Jacko, Bruce?
No, remember?
We had world
say,
call cards, and we had to go to the...
Jeez, I'm getting my age away here. I'm really getting a bit of a complex.
I don't think
here.
You know what a world call card is. Do you know what
Jacko,
a world
even,
call
even
card
I had those.
Yes, I actually did.
Guys, Sia didn't even have the Mixit group. Pure WhatsApp.
I'm not that young, Ty.
Sia's trying to ask, how do you put a world call card on your phone? I didn't
get it. Yeah, on your mobile.
On your phone.
Back in the day, Telkom cards.
What's a Nokia, hey?
Snake.
Bruce, bringing you back in here.
Long story. Yeah. We'll sit down and watch When we in the semifinals, you and I can chill and watch a game together. I'll tell you all about it. Because I remember being on the bus on our way to breakfast, right? And the bus is obviously full because we chose the silliest time to go to breakfast in Athens. And Marion Jones gets on, and I'm sitting, and she comes, and she's holding on to, you know, the pole. And for a second, I thought, I must get up, right? And she must sit. Because this is Marion Jones. And then the devil slapped me and said, no, you guys are here for the same damn thing. And I was like, and I don't, it was like probably in the first 3 days. And that's when it kind of landed that I am my hero, you know? And I looked around and the mates that I was with, and I was like, there's Marsha, there's Kate. I'm like, we are everything that we wanted to be. And we are here in the same capacity as the people we thought were great when we grew up, or when we watched what we felt was high performance sport. And that moment I'll never forget, because it literally hit me like, boom, because I literally felt a slap. And you are here for the same thing she's here for. I was like, she can stand. Pulled in my arms, and we got to breakfast. And yeah, that's one of the moments from Athens. There's one that involves you and I, Kate. I don't know if Jabu's going to go there before we drop the ball.
We will. Before, but that's an on-field thing. We'll talk about that shortly.
Yeah. So right now we're looking at rates, and like you said, Marsh, the distractions.
Well, this is something that's always interested me from the outside looking in. And Bruce, I'll bring you in here from either 2000. Well, I'm probably going to say 2004, because 2008 it didn't happen as much. But I always imagine the South African house is quite a fraternity kind of thing, where we're keeping up with each other's results. How big of a, is there anything when a South African, when Chad, when the rowers, when Caster, when they won their gold medals? I mean, how does that kind of thing, that's 2012, obviously going back to 2004, it was the swimming, the awesome foursome, it was Roland Schoeman, History Kluter. When they win their medals, how much of an impact does that make on you guys, the hockey team? And also just in terms of the vibe around the team, because obviously you also experienced 2008, which was a really bad year for South Africa with only Kutsal getting the silver. I wanted to know, did you experience quite a big difference between the two? And what is the relationship like between all the different South Africans in the village?
Yeah, so I think you mentioned about, you know, when some of our fellow South Africans win medals. I think in Athens we won quite a few. And that certainly inspired you. And I think we all celebrated when you hear someone winning a medal, there was some sort of announcement and it goes around, and when that person walks in, wherever, you give them applause and you give them a high five, and you just celebrate, everyone celebrates the medal win, and that inspires one as well. And I mean, you know, the reality is that you go there as a hockey team to obviously want to win a medal, but that's, you know, that's quite a tall expectation, but you know that this people is winning medals, that's going to inspire you. It gives you hope. It gives you dreams. Like, and Kate mentioned, anything is possible on the day. And for me, that's why Athens was so incredibly tight, because the results just didn't go our way. And you don't want to go there with regrets. And I won't talk about Beijing, because Beijing in itself as a hockey team as well, we also sort of, you know, didn't achieve what we wanted to. But that definitely 100% inspires you. And just to talk about inspiration. And funny enough, Kate mentioned Roger Federer being an icon. For me, I met Roger, not met him, but we got to chat to Roger Federer as just a normal person in Beijing, because we had gone to the opening ceremony and we were making our way back. And as they mentioned, when you hear people making a bit of a noise and there's a bit of friends, you know, there's someone there that's very famous. And we go there. And I remember myself, Gally, I think it was Jeff Abbott and Marvin Harper, we were walking together and we saw this crowd and we said, let's go see what's happening here. And we saw it was Roger Federer, but he had, you know, a convoy of, I don't know if it was bodyguards or teammates walking around him, because everyone wants to now chat. And I remember telling Gally, come, I need a photo with Roger. And I go across, and as I go close to Roger, I get this big hand across the chest, like, where are you going? And Roger sees this because he sees we're getting blocked, and he sees the South African flag. And he says, oh, no, it's fine. South Africans, come. And lets me in and takes a photo with me. And, I mean, that's, for me,
amazing
for the type of person
he is.
And then he goes and he gets on the same bus because, well, of course, we made sure we get on the same bus and he's getting on. And we get on the bus and we sit right there by them. And he starts chatting to us. I mean, obviously, we know his parents, his mother's from Durban. And he starts asking us about questions about hockey. You know, just like showing a bit of interest. And that was, for me, it was amazing. And that also inspired me to, you know, like to really perform, because these guys realize that they're just human as everyone else. And yeah, that for me was quite a humbling experience. And that also, those are sort of experiences that you take and memories that you take back with you forever.
We had Brandon Stone on our golf show not too long ago, and Brandon of course represented South Africa in 2012 in Rio in golf 2016 sorry, and he was saying that he got to the Olympics a couple of days later because I think the golfing competition started a few days after the Olympics kicked off, and he got down there. And he was trying to get used to jet lag because South America's quite a few hours behind SA. And he was wide awake at like 2 a.m. And he thought, no, the hell with this. He's going to go train. So he goes down to the gym and there's no one there. It's very empty. And he starts on the treadmill. And he's running and he's going at a decent pace. And next thing, someone comes next to him. He doesn't pay attention to who it is. And the next thing, he just hears, "Gudoof, gudoof." And then it just gets faster and faster and faster, and you can hear the rolling of the tread just going. And he goes, geez, you better pick up the pace. And he starts and starts and starts. Eventually, he's exhausted. He can't keep up. Turns, and he looks, and it's Serena Williams running next to him. And he's literally racing Serena, well, trying to, and she's kicking his ass.
So epic.
Tennis players are very special. Very, very inspirational and prominent. Marcia got a few signatures with tennis players as well. But coming to the closing ceremony, Jacko, do you remember? We started a band that night.
We started a band. Yeah.
We started a band that night.
Made it onto the stage as well.
There you go. No.
Who got on the stage?
Vaguely. But,
it was Andy and myself and you and
Ned
Jabba, I think. Was Jabba?
Yes. I don't know.
And there was an abandoned stage and each of us took to an instrument and we started to play.
I do remember that.
I can't believe you nearly forgot it.
Well, that's Craig Fulton for you. You see, the bad apple infiltrates the barrel, and then you got no prize. But I must say, I mean, you're on such a tight leash that the release when your games are finally over, it's, I mean, and it doesn't get completely debaucherous, but it's just such a, I think it's, and you're in this awesome environment, and you get to watch some of these world class events as well. I mean, we haven't even spoken about some of the stuff you get to watch, some of the stuff that we've seen over the years at the Olympics was really pretty cool. But, thanks for reminding me of that one, Kate. I'd forgotten about that.
On that subject, Craig, how does it work in terms of having access to other sporting events? Can you just walk in and watch?
I think it's changed over the years. Certainly in Atlanta, you put your name down and you hope obviously you're there to compete in your sport, but if you're only allowed to train certain, because every team's trying to train on their off days as well, so you might get given a slot or whatever. So if you're playing today and you're not playing tomorrow, for example, you might have a training session tomorrow, so you might have tomorrow sort of afternoon free, or your coaching staff will say you got the morning off, whatever the case is. And then you can, this is certainly how it happened in the earlier days, you could put your name down to go to, swimming was always a big one. You could never get into swimming, but certainly at something like athletics, much bigger stadium, so I saw like the 4x100 meters. I saw some really cool stuff. So it's a little bit luck of the drawish, but, another thing about the Olympics is, certainly the way I feel about it is, I'm not particularly into whatever, pick a sport, but you're still watching the world's best. So I still,
how long were the queues worth watching, to dressage? Was that quite a struggle to get into?
I wasn't interested in dressage, and I'm not sure if volleyball, beach volleyball wasn't a sport back then. Yeah, that would have been fairly popular as well, but Yeah, I know. Yeah, so it's, yeah, I mean, it's interesting stuff, you know, like, even, you know, this, it's stuff that you wouldn't really go and watch ordinarily, possibly, but it's still, you get the whole sense of the vibe. And, you know, there's no, I think a lot of people don't realize, a lot of non-sporting people, there's no such thing as an easy Olympic medal. It's not like a case of, okay, well, I'm going to take up this sport, so they're not going to maybe medal in that sport. I mean, it's the world's best, you know, competing. And, you know, for that reason, it's, you know, I'll watch any sport if it's the world's best competing, even if I'm a bit pretty clueless about what it entails.
Well, I think, Jacko, that's probably why I enjoyed Athens the most, was not only because it was my first one, but also because it was probably one of the more relaxed games in terms of people with accreditation. So normally they're really strict at the security checks, and you have to have your accreditation with your ticket, and or you have to have an accreditation that allows you entry into that particular venue. And because I have no idea why the volunteers just were more relaxed. I don't know if it was just a Greek thing or whether they were just struggling to really identify people to the pictures. So in Athens, when we had some downtime, we actually swapped accreditation with track and field athletes that were resting while the events were taking place.
Weren't you one of the IOC athlete representatives?
Yes. Well,
then, jeez, sorry. I hope you kept that quiet in your interview, Marsh.
Nothing. But it happened. Yeah, it was a wee soft. And I remember Paulo, I don't know, who was it? It was Liesl Dorothy. She was even, she had a guy's accreditation. But so we would go around looking for like athletes that maybe we had like the same color hair or something similar trait. And, but then we realized that they weren't even checking. They were literally only checking to see if the part of the accreditation that allowed you entry into that venue. So we would tie our jackets around our waist to cover the picture a bit and then show the accreditation and go in, and we would sit in the athlete section of the stands and watch some of the events. And I think that also made the games that much more special, was, you know, having your competition, knowing what you were there for, what made you an Olympian, but also the extra experience of the other events. And in Athens, it was probably the only games that we had the opportunity to do it a little bit more freely. Whereas now I think it's a little bit more difficult. Well, definitely this year. But I think like London was really tough. I think there wasn't even enough space in the stands for us to watch the finals as like the player section. And the volunteers were super strict. So, there were a lot of sort of arguments, in the stands with the volunteers and some of the players trying to watch the final.
Unlike the British, just want to stick to the rules. I think looking back at London, as you mentioned, Marcia, what was really cool for me was being in the dining hall quite often with big groups of South African team. And I remember quite clearly Chad competing in the 200. And we were sitting at, I can't remember, it would have been around breakfast or lunchtime, and sitting next to a table full of Americans and seeing them just going absolutely nuts while Phelps was in the lead, and just the South African contingent just slowly getting a little bit more enthusiastic, like watching a Bock game in an Irish pub somewhere overseas. And you're coming back, and I mean, I just remember going absolutely berserk, and we were on the tables and there was food flying everywhere and going absolutely nuts when you managed to win it. And like, those are the moments that stick out in my mind the most, I think. Like, obviously competing and meeting your heroes. I met Ryan Giggs, who as a Manchester United fan since a very, very young age, was an ultimate moment for me, but I managed to alienate him pretty quickly by asking him, how's the family? Which I didn't really think through at the time. It was 2012. And that obviously, I don't know how many of you know the scandal, but he'd been hooking up with his brother's wife for a while. I was just in awe of meeting him, and I managed to drop that bomb, which, didn't go down particularly well. But, you know, those are the kinds of things that you do. No, not my best, but yeah, starstruck. What can you do?
Justin, I once met, Joel Stransky. I didn't know the guy, and he was saying to me, yes, you know, it's so tough that everybody only remembers me for one moment of my career. And I was like, what, when you missed that kick in front of the post for Province in the Carrick Cup final? And he looked at me and he's like, I turned around and started talking to someone else. I was like, I think I'm not getting a photo with him tonight. But anyway, look, Just, you obviously have been playing at the top level over in Holland, and in the last 12 months with COVID, you've experienced going from full stadiums, packed crowds, festive, specifically when you were playing.
Maybe at my last club, but where I've been playing for the last year, it's been a slightly different situation, but yeah.
But even that, the end of your Amsterdam time was affected, right? I mean, how much of an impact is that going to make over in Tokyo now for the fans? I mean, you guys speak about it so remarkably, how much the fans lift, the experience lifts. I mean, the South African teams are used to playing in front of very small or empty crowds. But, you know, for the competition itself, you know, how much do you think this is going to impact on the actual competition, the fact that it's going to be empty?
I mean, guys, you all want to chime in here, I think. But I think in terms of the atmosphere itself, it's going to be quite eerie. I think walking into a stadium, warming up and hearing the echo of the ball hitting off the goals and stuff with nobody. Okay, yeah, you'll have some sound being played and some music and stuff. But I think it's going to be a really weird feeling for the guys, you know, being in that situation where there's no echo of the crowd. There's no cheering. There's no massive celebrations, which at the same time might in some way play into the hands of the South African teams. And I'd like to think it will. I think, like we've all mentioned at some point in this chat, we're known for our resilience. And a situation like that, playing in front of small or no crowds, that's nothing new to us. And often being considered the underdog and not having the support behind you. Yeah, I think a lot of the teams are going to underestimate that. And I think that's something that we can play to our advantage. And especially if I look at the schedule that the men have in particular, you're opening against a GB team who have had a lot of time together and have a lot of expectation. You know, they've got a centralized program. They've got all the funding in the world. I think that's a nice opportunity to start the tournament off with an upset, walk away with 3 points early on, and then, set yourself up for another 3 points against Canada late in the tournament and hope to pick up a point in between. Paula's nodding in agreement here, so I think I've hit the game plan pretty spot on. But I think it's gonna be for the individuals and for the players, it's gonna be tough. For players that haven't experienced an Olympic Games before, missing out on that element, I think, is gonna be really, really tough. But at the same time, a lot of them won't have experienced that, so they might not know what they're missing out on. Marcy nodding. Maybe you want to take over.
No, I don't know. I sometimes question, like, the impacts of COVID has been really big for everybody. And like Justin has said, like, he's, and Tyrone, you mentioned, he's played in the best league in the world with no people in the stands. So actually, like, teams who are accustomed to having people in the stands have also gotten used to not having people in the stands, and they've played the pro league as well with no people in the stands. But there are countries where they have had people, and I am part of like one of the IOC committees, and one of the New Zealand BMX athletes, she said, for New Zealand going to the Olympic Games, their biggest challenge is going to be adjusting to wearing face masks, because they haven't had to wear face masks. They've controlled COVID in such a way that the minute people enter New Zealand, they go into quarantine at the airport. So they're not joining the public. And so nobody has ever had to wear a face mask. And I don't know about you guys, but I've gotten used to not wearing a face mask. That coming here on holiday, like, we have to wear a face mask all the time, and I'm dying. And I don't even have to, like, think about competing at the highest level. So I can imagine how that becomes an issue for them. And the people in the stands is less of an issue versus, like, these other daily elements. But maybe for teams like Australia and New Zealand, the empty stands is going to be a bigger issue than it is going to be for the European teams, who have also gotten used to it.
The other thing that I think is of relevance is, I mean, we all know that we're not really going there on a level playing field. We never do. You know, I mean, Justin talks about the program that the English have got, and that's just one example. But I think what COVID has done is interrupted your traditional preparation for the Olympics, you know. So the Aussies and the Belgians, I know they've had Pro League and the like, but they haven't lined up all these pre-prep tournaments. And obviously the SA guys lost out on Malaysia and had to play against Namibia, et cetera, et cetera. But in the bigger scheme of things, you know, I think back to my days when I was playing, and the more you could sort of unsettle the opposition, you know, you'd rather play them on like a bumpy field or as a crude example. But what this has done is put a few speed bumps in the path of a very slick Olympic preparation for these other teams. And for our guys, it's like, you know, we're used to having half a team in Europe and half a team in South Africa and making do type thing, you know. So I think COVID's been an absolute disaster, and it's been tragic on many levels. But in terms of this, I think if you're assessing how it's going to impact South Africa versus how it might impact the teams we're playing against, I think net-net it might be advantageous to us because, you know, we're used to just rolling up our sleeves and getting on with it. Whereas, you know, this is a massive – I mean, can you imagine one of the Southern guys saying his biggest adjustment is that he's got to get used to wearing a mask? I mean, they could say, can you just toughen up a bit, please, you know?
Yeah.
It's a crude example, but it's – you know, that's New Zealand versus South Africa as an example, you know? Mm-hmm. And our guys and girls, I think, you know, we've had to deal with COVID, but, you know, our prep would have been far suboptimal compared to the teams we're competing against. And I know that the men, I speak with a little bit of authority being a selector in the men's side of things, and it's a happy team. They've done a lot of hard yards behind the scenes, doing things that they can do. You know, the mental aspects and getting to know what makes the guy next to you tick, and hopefully that's building a whole lot of additional muscle that will help when the chips are down.
But Jacko, don't you think that that's also like the important element that you've just mentioned is the mental part and the focus on the internal focus? Because I think that a lot of the things, I don't know about you guys, but I know that it's also a default of ours as South Africans to always look to the outside and see ourselves as some sort of victim. We can't have the funding. We can't have the whatever. And actually, if we change our mindset and see it as, we have resilience, we have tenacity, and we're all in the same boat. We're all playing in an empty stadium. We all, you know, and if we use it to our advantage and not look at the outside, which I think you guys who are working with the men, Sia mentioned it, you've mentioned it, Paul has mentioned it. There's a lot of internal focus on the, like the mental training. I think that for me, that gets me excited about them. Looking forward to watching the men play. And I think if we keep reminding them that to stay on that path, if you listen to Penny Haynes speak, when she speaks about winning her medals, she says that the competition, there was a swimming competition before Sydney, and she lost because at the starting blocks, she kept looking to the side of her and remembering what her competitor was strong at. And in Sydney, she just focused on herself and focused what she was good at. And she didn't bother looking left or right. She just kept her focus on herself, on her breathing, on her strokes. And she won gold. And I think these are the types of things that we have to, I wish that somebody had kept reminding me that at the Olympic Games before.
Just to jump onto yours and Jacko's comment, I think one concept we always take as the team is TIA. This is Africa. Whenever we go and play a tournament in North Africa, we are normally the guys that are on top, where the rest of the nation see us as the advantageous nation. And normally we take that for granted to some extent, but when we go to these international tournaments, it's the other way around. So I'd say in some way or another, we can take the TIA concept everywhere we go, because now we have an identity for ourselves, because we know that we are resilient, yet there are so many things that we are so good at that other nations don't have. If, let's say, a top five nation had to have all of their preparation things taken away from them, how would they adjust to those standards? Would they be able to keep up, or would they fall behind? And I think that's where we need to embrace a little bit more in what we have and what we're resilient about going forward.
And as South Africans, there's a whole lot to play for right now.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Before you stepped in, I was about to literally throw the mic at you and say, You know, we had 18 days in Poch, and I tallied up and I said to Springs, I'm like, 29 sessions. Springs is like, really? Is that how many we've had? And I was like, you didn't count when you were putting this program together? I was like, no, I just knew what we needed to do, when, and when I said it to you guys, you'd come back to me and say, no, it's not going to work, or this is the right program. And I'm like, no, this has been perfect. And in those 18 days, you guys, Sia, every day without fail, had at 7:30, I think it was, had a walk as a team. And those conversations, Springs, myself, Sigs, Ashlyn, Chairs, we don't really get into those discussions, right? And those conversations. And that is something so special, that is, but there's a team and there's a family. And in those 10, 15 minutes, that's where family starts becoming what it should be. And we never ask, right? So yeah, we've never asked what the chats were about. If there was anything that came from that needed to be handled by the coaching staff, it would come. But there was no feedback from the walk. The walk was for the boys, and we get to breakfast and the boys are like all hyped up. I'm like, my God, I just woke up 20 minutes ago and you guys are already on like 4 hours into the day. And just that culture that we've been breeding, and yes, I was late in. I've only been with you guys for about 2 years, but wow. And that's what I wanted to throw to you. And you've already spoken about TIA and what that means to us and how we can use that against the rest of the world. And hey man, come on.
This is what it's about. This is exactly what it's about. Like, people don't see all the nitty gritties. There's a lot of conflict and a lot of clashing that happens, but it's necessary stuff, because if we were all in the same mindset, I don't think we would be striving to be a better nation or better players. And it's beautiful because everyone comes with different ideas and there's always some form of disagreement. But at the end of the day, once we get onto the park, we have to sing the same song and play the same game. So, yeah, that's the beauty of it all.
I love that. To be honest, I love that you're being real, and I love that you're being honest about it, because I think that for a lot of teams that I've been in, there are moments that we tend to stick our heads in the sand and not want to embrace the conflict, and from the conflicts we only grow if we can see that. And I love that you guys are embracing that. And you know, you said like you have tough discussions, and I was never a fan of conflict myself. So, but I had to learn to get uncomfortable. I really love that. That's where the men's team is at, and that's where you guys also see the positive from it. And it's not that you see it as something, an Achilles heel that's holding you back, but you see it as more the platform to grow.
Yeah.
I think it's really, really inspiring. It would be nice. It's a pity that none of us have that insight into the women's team, because this is really lovely to be inspired by what the men are doing and to hear from, you know, all of you that are involved in some way, whether it's a selector or player or coach. But it would be nice to get a little bit of insight into where the women are at and what their mentality is like. Because I think at the end of it, you know, Tyrone, your question was about the stands, people in the stands. I think that Tokyo is going to be just the mental games for all the athletes. I think that a lot of the athletes are leaving home with a lot of stuff on their minds. There are a lot of athletes who have prepared for years for this and like Sia, are having to stay at home the last minute for a number of reasons, whether it's injury or whether it's a positive COVID test. And that's always going to upset the rest of the games in some way, whether it's your teammates, whether it's the competition. But yeah, I think Tokyo 2021 is just going to be mental games.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, we will be hearing from some people involved, Michael Baker, Sandile Bosman. They'll be joining us for the the Talking Tokyo series when we preview the girls' games as well. You know, one of the things that we haven't touched on, and I think it would be amiss not to at least talk about it, you've all been to the Olympic Games. We've spoken about that. We've spoken about the fun off the field, the mental side of it. But each of you must have a standout memory from your time on the turf. And, Paulo, I'm going to go to you because, no, of course I'm going to start with you because yours involves another person on the call anyway.
Yes. actually, was Susan our captain then?
Yes.
So captain Susan has the ball about 7 yards outside the circle. The neural will come in. We can't go straight in because obviously I was a great leader inside. I'm moving and shaking, right? Losing everyone that wants to come anywhere near me. No, they have to go outside. Ball goes right. Ah, Kate Hector Woods these days carries the ball. I'm like, I'm open. No, she wants to carry it in. I'm like, oh, come on, Kate. She goes in. She takes a shot. Oh, my God, kill it. And the rebound goes straight back to her. On her forehand, boom, comes out to my forehand, hands apart, come on,
go.
And what too many people don't know, a lot of people don't know, is that once the ball went past the Spanish goalkeeper, and once it touched the net, I kind of blacked out. You don't see that on TV because I've been doing this my whole life, right? Have I score a goal, I celebrate. And so I come to, I'm on the halfway line, and Pitty's literally shaking me, saying, you did it, you effing did it. And I'm like, yeah, of course I did. I'm like, what? I know you don't know this game.
Awesome. I did not know that.
Yeah. So for years, people have been asking me, like, I've got the DVD. Can I give it to you? Sia, do you know what DVDs are?
Of course. We used to have a VCR too.
All right. I thought you stream everything these days. So yeah, have offered to give me the DVD. I was like, some memories, because I didn't remember anything after literally touching the ball and it hitting the back of the net, right? For years. It's been about 3 or 4 years, and Athens was 17 years ago. So I left it for a good 14, 15 years until I, okay, cool. Let me see this moment, because some moments I feel that should be left in the moment. But all I know is that moment had literally changed my life, and I wouldn't be Coach Waller without that goal, because I wouldn't be as pedantic about scoring goals, and I wouldn't be about the 9 yard or the 6 yard area as I am right now. And Sia knows it.
Of course, that was a 4-3 win over Spain.
It was a
match winning goal. Not just
No, that was in the middle, 33rd minute.
No. You're claiming it.
Okay. But Sia knows that even when I have a goalkeeper session with the national guys, every time I score against a national goalkeeper, I'm like, this is what I do, man. This is what I do.
What about
only,
you?
Only the others, Paul.
What about you, Bruce? What is your Olympic highlight on the field?
I think my Olympic highlight has to go to our first match at Athens against Argentina. Obviously a big deal because of my first Olympic Games. And I know we didn't touch on, you know, we speak about things being different now for this Tokyo, but a big part of it is also that opening ceremony and going to those sort of things and experiencing that. But I remember going to sleep the night before our first game against Argentina, and Rez being the title coach he is, he's given us a whole briefing of who's starting, which game, and what your role is going to be for every match. So you prepare yourself. You know, tomorrow you're starting and you're playing this and this role. And we played Argentina our first game, and obviously still taking in the whole vibe and the crowd and everything. And I remember, I think we were, it was 1-1, or we were one, it was 0-0. I can't remember the exact score, but I remember getting the ball from the back, passed to me, and I just received the ball in the midfield, and I turned, and I just saw Beefy, way up on the 25, and I just gave it one full shot. And I found Beefy on the top of the D, and he scored this incredible goal because he ran inside from the 25 across and had a backstick goal. And I mean, it wasn't my goal, but I mean, that was the winning goal, and that for me was special. So yeah, that is something that I'll never forget, my on-field experience and memory, fond memory. Paula's going to remember that, Paula.
No, I'm thinking back at Athens. I'm like, give Beefy the ball, there's a great outcome. You know, and he'd made himself that kind of a person. And the fact that you remember that moment so well, I'm like, yeah, we all saw that goal. And it all gave us, the people that were in Athens, like, boys are doing all right. We can do all right. And we did all right, huh? And like Marsh said, we beat the gold medalist 3-0. And that's something special. And we look back, and these are the small things that we're hoping the 2021 crew can take on, because there's no team in the world that does not fear us. They know that we have moments of greatness. And that's what I'm looking forward to seeing in Tokyo this year.
Yeah, I think that was beautifully summarized there about the fact that there's no team in the world that doesn't fear South Africa. And I think that's across the board in any sporting context. And we've seen how well South Africa has done when it comes to any sporting event, and hockey is certainly no different, especially when it comes to the Olympics, especially in anything at the Olympics. Kate, your favorite on-field memory when it comes to your three Olympic Games that you took part at?
It's not one moment, but it's one game, and it's definitely in London against the USA. We had to win by 5-0 in order to play for the higher classification against the US. And honestly, they were ranked a couple of places above us. The odds were stacked against us, and we didn't only win. We didn't only win 5-0, we won 7-0. And it was just that moment in sport where just everything came together. And it was a complete team effort, you know, multiple people scoring, but those kind of goals that start from the keeper and work their way up the field, and it was just goal. And the belief and the confidence that started to sort of build amongst the team, it was truly the most memorable sporting moment I think I'll always just keep with me.
Oh, man, jeez. I've got to admit, and I know for a fact Ty feels the same way. I mean, you can imagine how envious myself and him are of all of you Olympians to be able to recount memories like these. And I'm sure, Justin, you've got one or two in the bag that will forever live in the memory banks.
Yeah, you could say that. Similar to Paula, also against Spain. I had to wait till the third game of the tournament to get my first flick in the game. So that was a bit frustrating, having built up to game one and not getting any against Australia. 2-2 draw against GB in game two, no corners. And finally in game three, getting my first flick of the tournament. And, you know, those moments you've played over in your head so many times, and you had your spot that you're going to flick, and I knew exactly where it was going, and everything went wrong. Straight into the first wave, ball into the deck, over the keeper's head. It was the worst goal I scored the whole tournament, but I couldn't care less. And I guess I've been known for maybe being a little bit over enthusiastic with my celebrations over the years. Jakes, you might remember my first ever goal celebration at the Comm Games in Melbourne, where I left the entire team behind to run to my grandfather, who was on the other side of the field on the halfway line. So my grandfather had made his first trip overseas ever in his lifetime to come and watch me play my debut, and I managed to score on debut. Anyway, that was Comm Games. Back to the Olympics. Absolutely incredible moment, scoring my first Olympic goal. And yeah, I've got pictures of that moment, and I've got videos of that moment. And every single time I see it pop up or I see a video come by, I just get that same feeling of, yeah, I guess it's some type of combination of, yeah, passion, emotion, fear, hope. You know, we ended up losing the game, but just feeling that you've done something to contribute to your team potentially winning and potentially getting a result against one of the best teams in the world. That feeling you never lose, I don't think. Yeah, and that, you know, thinking about it now and talking about it has also kind of got me going like, geez, what am I doing here sitting on the couch? I'm going to get in a plane and bug off to Tokyo as soon as possible.
Just go do your COVID test quickly and you never know. It could be space. Jacko, what about yourself? Two Olympic Games, missing the one in the middle, but lots of highlights. Anyone that stands out for you?
Yeah, that game that Bruce talks about is certainly one. It's interesting, and it ties in maybe with what Justin was saying, that, you know, in Atlanta, our first game was Australia, and we got a draw, you know, shocked everyone. Didn't really shock us. But our game before that against Australia in the lead-up, probably 4 months prior, they beat us, I think, 11-1 in Canberra. And we walked into the change room after. I remember saying to Gary Boddington, I said, geez, I can't believe they fell for that sucker punch. I mean, we managed to sneak a 1-1 draw. So that sticks out. And then also that game that Bruce was talking about, Argentina, that happened even our 200th cap. So that is quite special. And it teed us up nicely for the rest of that Olympic that tournament. Unfortunately, we didn't manage to win any other of our pool games, which is, as Bruce said, I mean, the gold medal game that Olympics was Netherlands, Australia, and we lost by a single goal to both those guys. So again, it talks to this common thread that's coming out here that on our day, the margins are very, very slight. That was a game that everything just went according to plan. You know, Rev's meticulous in his preparation, and we had targeted certain games we needed to win. That was one of them. Them in India, I think, was the other one that we let ourselves down a bit in that game, having been 2-0 up at one stage. But, just everything sort of came together that game, and it was a nice way to start the tournament. And also, as I said, Turner's cap was quite special.
Yeah, I won't lie. There was another game there as one of those ardent fans who are a little bit petty at times, because that's what sports fans can be like. I really enjoyed that victory over Egypt. In fact, as a hockey watcher, as a South African hockey watcher, that was really probably one of the first games where I got to watch on TV live. And yeah,
that's actually a good point, Ty, because as Bruce mentioned, Egypt were there because we dropped the ball in Nigeria. Kate and Marshall, remember that beat them in the pool game, and somehow conspired to lose the, you know, the whole lot of things. And if, again, the lesson that was, we could have wallowed in our self-pity, but we picked ourselves up and managed to, against all odds, qualify to get to the Olympics as well, and had Egypt in our pool. So there's always needle in that game, and Sia can relate to that. He would have played against Egypt a number of times, and I think it's still very much the case, trying to compete with them for the African sort of mantle. But that game at the Olympics, again, just vindicated the gap that we'd managed to establish between ourselves and them. It's never pleasant playing against them, unfortunately. I don't know if things have changed, but, it was quite nice to put one over. It always is, particularly with what happened in Abuja.
Last but not least, Marsha, of our Olympians, joining us tonight. 2004, 2008 and 2012. Which individual moment, if there is one, ranks as your favorite memory?
No, I was just listening to these amazing stories and thinking, I've never scored a goal at the Olympic game. I didn't score many goals in my career, so it's no surprise. But, I think mine are exactly the same as Kate. The German game in Athens, where we went. But what for me is so special about that German game is actually the day before. So we were proper victimizing ourselves, you know, like, we're the victim. This is not going well. It's not going as the way we wanted it to go. We're just losing. We're not getting the results we want. And we were really down in the dumps. And we had, Kate, do you remember our, and Paula, do you remember our, the sports psychologist that was working with us leading up to the game? He came into the room and he said, right. Mark? Yeah? Mm. Mark. Yes, and he said to us, Martin, right. I can just picture him standing there. He wore glasses. He was standing there and he was just like, right, guys, it's not going the way you wanted it to go. So, we had this exercise where we wrote down our biggest frustrations and fears, and we scrunched up these pieces of paper and we smashed them out of the room as if we were like hitting home runs at the biggest baseball game in the world. And that gave us such a release that we went into the German game feeling like the tournament had just started for us. And I think that's why that game, it's not just the result, it's just that feeling from before, that for us, that was
sort of the start of the tournament for us. And if only it was earlier when the tournament actually started, but I think that game was a turning point for our team and, you know, not just being the, and then we walk away from that Olympic Games being the only team to take points off the gold medalists. And I think that's why it definitely probably stays as one of my favorites. You know, London was great. The US game, we were like cheering like we were rock stars with every goal. I think we thought that everybody in the stands was just there for us. We were like, this is our moment. I can remember it. We celebrated each goal like we were winning the gold medal on that day. But that German game stands out for me because I think we just went into it with a completely different mentality and we left the games knowing that, you know, like we did it. And if only we had that faith in ourselves earlier.
Well, Marcia, on that subject and on that line of inspiration, there's no doubt that a lot of the players are fans of the show, we'd like to think, although we know for a fact, and many have been guests, and yeah, they'll be listening to this, no doubt. Some words of wisdom from yourself, having been to three Olympic Games, captain twice. What is your message to the men and ladies who will be representing South Africa over in Japan?
I think, Derek, you know, we've touched on a lot of the things. I think they're probably, if I have to pick three top things, it would be keep the focus on yourselves, embrace the conflict, embrace the distractions, embrace everything that's happening. But when it comes to stepping on the field for competition, focus on you and your game plan and what you need to do. We've seen so many teams in the world at major events shock everybody with unorthodox play. Some players on the field that we would probably look at going, huh? How do they play international hockey? But they do it because the whole team focuses on their team process, their team goal, their team structures for that game. So my first one would be just focus on yourselves. And two, off the field, enjoy it as much as possible. And three, yeah, go out there and make memories.
Love it. Well, I see you raising your hand. It's not a class. You can speak whenever you want to, but feel free to chat.
No, I was just thinking, you know, Marcia talking about that Germany game that was so memorable for us as the South African women's team. And I know that in that game, I think I might have played 1 or 2 minutes. I made the team literally the last minute to come into being an Olympian. So a good friend of mine got injured in the holding camp, and I got called up. And obviously, Sia and I have kind of had this conversation. I had this conversation with Gawen now, who went in Sia's place. And these are things that we don't know really all the time about what happens to players that come in last minute or people that don't actually make it last second. And these are still memories that last a lifetime. And we know right now in the national men's team, we've had 3 guys that had to be replaced. It's heart-wrenching for all of us that sit here and look at, you know, I know she and I have had long chats about, you know, what's happened right now. But going forward, there's someone who's there who thinks, maybe I shouldn't be here. And how do they make those memories, Marsh, that you just spoke about? Like, make those damn memories. And it's really tough when you don't feel like you belong at times. But, again, as South Africans, I walked into that team. I had literally 16 players. I had 15 hugs from every single teammate, even people that I'd never hugged before. When I walked into camp that day, everybody made sure they touched me. And we talk about South Africans being, geez, like we are the greatest, aren't we? And we know how to uplift each other. We know how to help each other. And even with what's going on in the country right now, I've seen so many people that are here or not here, making sure that they can give whatever they can. So yeah, there are moments where you don't feel you belong, and then when your moment comes, make the best of it. Damn, make the best of it. And we do that. And everyone around you is happier than you about making this damn moment happen for yourself. So I can't wait to see players, staff, physios, doctors, Team South Africa, who weren't really on the books maybe a year and a half ago, who are now going to be in Tokyo, and they come back with stories that are going to be changing lives, either for themselves or the people around them, or even their families. So this is the exciting part about the Olympic Games, right? It's about the culture, it's about humanity, it's about all of us just competing and people around you making you feel like you're a superstar.
Paul, just to jump onto your chat there, you're touching heartstrings there. Like, I'd say the biggest thing more than anything is just having a conversation with the guy that's going to be taking your spot, because there's a level of guilt or there's a level of whatever they might be feeling in the moment. But one thing that stood out the most is that the same people have been in this process with you from the very beginning. So it's not necessarily about, yes, the moment sucks because you might not be going, but this is the same person that has kept you accountable, kept you on your toes all this time, has also been fighting for that spot too. So I think it's important that guys, girls also realize that in the spirit of competition, it's essential for you to understand that everyone is putting in the work. It's not just you only. It's just maybe a dream delayed, but not a dream denied.
Just one more thing, Derek, from me. I agree wholeheartedly with what Marsha was saying. The only other thing I would add in is almost you got to expect the unexpected. And, you know, expect the highs to be higher than you expect. Expect the lows to possibly be lower than you expect. And, I mean, let's be honest, there's a possibility that the men or women's team could take a big score from, you know, one of the world's best teams. But there's also a possibility they might get points against Great Britain, for example. The men, I think the men should be focusing on points against Great Britain, win against Canada, and suddenly you're in the mix, you know. So whether these teams lose a 6-0 or a 7-0 or an 8-0, whatever the case is against one of these teams, and it might happen, hopefully it doesn't happen, but it might happen. So you get 0 points in that game, you pick yourself up and you go and get points in the next game. And the history of our performances at the Olympics are such that we do surprise teams. And if you can continue to do that at these Olympics, then I think it's job done, because you'll still be inspiring the next Justin Reed Ross of the world, you know. And I think there's a danger that, like we said earlier, or Marsh was saying, like we play the victim card, we've lost this, we've lost that. Pick yourself up, there's another opportunity tomorrow. And you win that game and things change. Your mindset changes and it's a new beginning again. So that's what I'd say to them in over and above what Marsha's saying, is that the emotional rollercoaster they're about to get on. And admittedly, there's no crowds there, so that's a double-edged sword, I guess. But they're in for something they've never experienced before, and that's got to embrace that. Guys, can I excuse myself? Sorry, I can hear a baby crying. I'm going to get yanked out of here embarrassingly shortly. So let me rather preempt that. No, but very lucky seeing everyone, and look forward to chatting to guys again, man.
Probably preluded to where we were about to go next. You know, I've been fortunate enough to be a fan of all seven of our guests tonight, but more fortunate to have become friends with you guys over the sport of hockey over the past decade that I've been talking and writing about the sport. It's been a privilege. You've inspired me, the patience that people have with the sport at times, and the administrators, and the fact that they still put their country first, always, is something that always inspires me and is a lesson that I'm constantly sharing with both of my sons. Maybe one of them is taking it in a little bit more than the other, seems. The youngest is still very young. And he's named after a rugby player. My bad. It was an absolute pleasure. I could sit here and listen all night, but it's almost morning now and we need to get some sleep before Tokyo starts. Thank you for joining us. I look forward to talking about Tokyo as the tournament goes underway. We'll have two or three guests as we look at each game. But I hope tonight, or whenever you are listening to this, has wet the whistle, has made you hungry for the main event. This was the starter and it's just going to get better. Can South Africa go and ruffle some feathers? Well, there's no doubt that we can. Will we? That's what we'll find out over the next week and a half. They're in Tokyo. They're there to do South Africa proud. And what a great, great opportunity. 9 years since South African hockey was at the Olympic Games. We're going to make sure that people know we're there. Thanks, everybody, for joining us. It's been fantastic. I can't wait. The spirit of Ubuntu is back.
Sure is.
Thanks, Tyron.
Thanks, guys. Thank you so much.
Thanks, guys.
Cheers,
thanks,
all.
Eric. Thank you, guys.
Thanks, everybody. Bye. Looking forward to the banter during the games as well.
Can't wait.
Yeah.
Cheers.
Cheers. Cheers, guys.
Bye.
Cheers, Marshy Mark.
Bye.